Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Caught Red Podcast. As always, we are your hosts. I am Megan Light.
And I'm Jesse Light.
We're just two dog lovers here to talk some true crime, horror movies, and if you can't hear it, our dogs, too. They always need to make an appearance. I'm glad the cats made the Instagram story a little bit. Like, they are still here. They still exist. We just have to keep them out of the room because Breeze will just not shut up the whole time if he's in here.
I feel like they destroy all the wires and cables and shit, too.
Mowgli!
Excuse you. It's just chaos. Hey, guys.
Let's see. We finished The Fall of the House of Usher. And what did you think, love?
I recommend it.
Yeah?
It was pretty cool. It had my attention the whole time, which takes a lot.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
Thank God it was only 8 episodes, or else you wouldn't have finished it.
I put my phone down. I focused strictly on
it. Well, I don't know about the entirety of it.
I didn't, like, multitask and watch football while I was watching.
Now, that's a big step for you. I'm very proud of that. I liked it. Mom was just asking if she could watch The Haunting on Hill House or if it'd be too scary for her, and I said, you'll be fine. Might have to restart that one again, too, because it was like the OG one by him.
I guess I'll give it a try then.
Okay.
Yeah?
You'll be not just physically present, but mentally as well.
We'll see. No promises.
We didn't really watch anything else because Goosebumps, we want to get a few more before we watch those again. We didn't mention the other week, but we watched To Catch a Killer on Hulu.
You did.
Did you not? You were physically present. But it's got the girl from Divergent, the ex not anymore going to be Aaron Rodgers. Whatever her name is, I can't think of it.
Emily Blunt? No.
No, like Shaylin or something like that. I don't remember. But she is a rookie. No, she's not a rookie.
Oh, yeah, I did watch that with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's a cop and she's got some different intuitions about her because of her past. And she gets pulled to like a specialty squad that's going after this killer that's sniping his victims. So it was pretty good overall, though. I liked it.
It was.
It made me think about that Black and Blue movie we watched a while back. We'll have to put a picture of our blow-ups after our third one arrives so people can see our blow-ups, because I love my little Mikey Light outside.
Yes, the first year we've actually decorated a little bit for Halloween, so I
Dollar
think it
General,
looks good.
Dollar Tree and Dollar General's where I hit those up. And then the skeletons were from Amazon.
I wish all the skeletons would glow in the dark or something so you could see them at night.
I can get spray paint.
Ooh.
I can get like glow in the dark spray paint.
That's not a bad idea.
I don't know how effective it is. I've never used it before. But we can give it a shot.
Sure.
It just means I get to go to Lowe's again or something like that. It's not a problem. Mom can go with me tomorrow when she comes up and we can just look at paint together.
Well, there you go.
That's all our excitement. Jesse has the entertainment for us this time around. All I know is the one word. Dismemberment.
Yes, it's the first dismemberment. Is that how you say it?
Dismemberment?
Yeah, dismemberment case that I've done. So it's a little freaky.
I don't know if I've done one.
Crazy. Just to think that somebody has the capability of doing
hacking
something
pieces.
Like that. Like, what the fuck? So I'll get into it. My sources today would be ToledoBlade.com, AnnArbor.com, WizLawJournal.com, ABC30, CBS News, Inquisitor.com, and then I watched this kind of documentary on Investigation Discovery called Fatal Vows.
Oh, you were able to find it?
Yes, it was on the Max.
Oh, very nice.
And then I read the victim's brother's book. He briefly talked about what happened. The majority of the book like has nothing to do with what happened.
It had one star on the Kindle, so
it was rough. Like some of the paragraphs would just cut in and out. Like some sentences just disappeared. I don't know if it was like the Kindle version was bad or what, but
it was probably just him.
Maybe. I don't know. It was called Life 101, but I got some interesting things from it. But this story began with your typical high school sweethearts. Actually, it started even before that. Lynette Quast was born to Alan and Barbara Quast. Her mother was a homemaker and her father was a factory worker. Lynette met a boy named Thomas Kraft when they were in kindergarten. They grew up together in Whitewater, Wisconsin, and were always pretty good friends. The couple started dating in high school. Lynette was always this outgoing, energetic, caring person and just a friend to everyone.
As soon as you do this type of descriptions, like, you know something bad will happen to that person. It never fails.
I swear, they're always the nice person that gets killed. What the hell? She was the sweetest person, and then you have Tom, who was much more of like an introvert and kind of kept to himself, kept rather quiet, and he had always been like that. He was an only child, but Lynette was always the one to like introduce Tom to her friends and new people, and I guess opposites attract, right? She wanted to get him out of his little shell that he was in, but he was never really interested. After they graduated high school, the two went to college. Lynette studied nursing at Alverno College's School of Nursing, which was in Milwaukee. It's about an hour from her home, and she lived on campus there. Tom studied mechanical engineering at the Milwaukee School of Engineering, and he lived nearby by himself. Lynette and her whole family were devout Catholics, so they were strongly against what Megan and I call shacking up.
Yeah, baby.
They were more of wait till marriage type of family, to each his own. Tom ended up graduating with a bachelor's in mechanical engineering. He was always a great student and finished at the top of his class. And right away, he was offered a job. Lynette, on the other hand, never finished her degree. She was like two courses shy of being able to graduate in 4 years. She actually failed her hands-on like nursing assessment.
That's like the easiest thing.
Well, apparently she would like nearly faint at the sight of blood, so I don't know what made her think
she wanted to go into that field. Like, the hands-on part's like, you'll be doing that the rest of your life. That should be the easiest.
Well, if you hate like needles and blood that, I don't know why you're getting into that career anyways, but
money,
I guess. Tom's new job was with James River Corporation in Toledo, Ohio, where he oversaw plant operations in Ohio and Michigan. And when he told Lynette the news, obviously, she was really happy for him. She wasn't sure like what direction her life was leading her career-wise after she didn't make it through nursing school. It was the first time she had ever really like failed at something and didn't really know what to do. But she knew she wanted to be with Tom, and Tom had the perfect solution. They'd been dating 7 years. He wasn't going to go to Ohio without Lynette, so he ended up proposing to her.
Aww.
They got married at the age of 21 in a traditional Catholic wedding, and she saw stability with Tom. She knew he came from a good family. They were wealthy, and she was going to be all right with him, whether she like got a job or decided to be like a stay-at-home mom or something in the future. They moved to this very small village of Swanton, Ohio, about 18 miles west of Toledo near the Michigan state line. It's about like 6 hours away from her family.
I was wondering where it was at because you said Ann Arbor for one of your sources, and that's obviously Michigan. So I was like, huh, interesting.
Interesting. All over the place. But they seemed very happy together at first. They had a nice home. It wasn't a mansion or anything, but they were comfortable. They had a great neighborhood. It was in a cul-de-sac. It was everything she'd ever wanted, and she could call her friends and family a lot to tell them about it. they felt like all they really needed now was to start a family. They're always seen being like super affectionate, kissing and hugging. And it was only a matter of time before they had some little ones running around.
So when they're in the grocery store, she grabs his butt like I did to you and embarrass you?
I don't know what you're talking about. Too much PTA or...
PDA.
PDA.
PDA is the...
Either way.
You doof.
You a doof. The only real concern at this point in their relationship, besides Tom being like super antisocial, was that Lynette gave up her future as a nurse.
She didn't give it up.
It just wasn't for her.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I was saying a second ago, like, oh, can't, if you can't do blood, I don't know what bodily fluids you would be able to handle. It's a dirty business.
Yeah. So she didn't really have something to make her own. And I guess she could be a real housewife of Ohio. I don't know. Tom didn't really encourage her to keep trying with the nursing thing or to try something else. So you got to wonder if he was happy with this, like this would give him some kind of control over the household.
Well, with everything she took for her classes, it probably wouldn't be much for her to like just, you know, maybe veer left or veer right, like go towards like a nutrition dietetics or, you know, something that's kind of along that medical line, but not having to deal with what would be in those hospital settings.
Right. She did nearly 4 years. Like if she only needed two courses, she had probably done enough of the other stuff. Yeah. But he didn't really support her like in
like you do me way. When I suggest going back to school or doing right. other things.
Yeah. So you just wonder if this would end up being a problem down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And since Lynette didn't work, Tom would give her like a weekly allowance, which I always thought was weird for like grown-ups to give other grown-ups an allowance.
I get it.
You do? Okay. That's all you're going to say?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it because if he's making the money and...
Like you know, here, you only get $100 to spend.
$100, whatever time period this is going to go a lot further than what we spent at the grocery store a couple days ago.
True. Tom had a great income with his mechanical engineering job, and Lynette focused on like the daily household chores. Lynette loved to shop and enjoyed going on shopping sprees. She had.
Why'd you look at me?
I was just thinking Target. She had to-do lists, reminders, so there was like little sticky notes all over the house.
Oh, that'd be annoying.
And she was kind of a hoarder too, so everything she shopped, she just kept in her little room, and it just built up and built up. And of course, being the devoted Catholic that she was, she found a local Catholic church there in Swanton, and she never missed Mass. In 1991... their first son, Chris, was born. They were overjoyed with this, but it wasn't an easy pregnancy or a delivery for Lynette. She had a few problems afterwards. She developed diabetes and high blood pressure.
Mm.
And Lynette, who was always this energetic and outgoing person, became easily tired and withdrawn. And she didn't seem as happy as normal. There was probably some postpartum depression there, too.
I don't think it was like a diagnosed thing back then, though, like it is today.
Probably not, yeah. And this kind of seemed to leave Tom a bit unsatisfied at times. He felt like this wasn't the woman that he married. The pressure of his demanding job, a newborn baby, and a sick wife started to get to Tom. Behind Lynette's back, he started growing pot in the basement, which is...
How random.
Yeah, and a big no-no back then in like 1991. I mean, that could get you fired for sure, but...
That'll get you in federal prison.
Oh, yeah. But he needed to smoke weed to relax, I guess. But Lynette didn't know about it till later on. She didn't do drugs. She didn't drink. Maybe like the occasional glass of wine. So he hid it from her knowing that if she found out, she wouldn't allow that in their house and she wouldn't be very happy. So I don't know how you can hide marijuana plants in the house. Like, love, did you get sprayed by a skunk or something?
Like, does she not ever go to the basement for anything?
Yeah, like, what is like, that smell?
Like, are there light bulbs down there? And he's like, oh, I'll go get them. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, how do you miss that? But his thought process was like, it's cheaper this way. It's cheaper than going to a drug dealer, I guess. So I'm just going to grow my own pot.
Or just get a prescription written by a doctor.
Well, you can't do that back then.
For his issues?
You can't buy weed back then.
No, I meant like prescription medication written from a doctor, like an actual legal...
For stress?
Route. Yeah.
Who knows? So their marriage starts to slowly go downhill. See, Tom had a problem, okay? Tom tried to bond with Lynette, but his only real way of showing that was to have sex with her. And I'm talking like a real problem. Like, he demanded sex from her several times a day.
Get him a pocket pussy.
A blow-up doll or something?
Something.
Yeah, that's not normal for any relationship, first off, especially...
Man, she'd be so worn out.
Right.
And she's only pregnant now, like...
Especially for someone that just went through, like, a difficult pregnancy and delivery on top of dealing with the mental issues that she had. Like, she clearly didn't have the same sex drive as Tom, but he was just, like, insistent upon it. Tom wanted sex from her all the time, and she would give in to his desires just to keep him happy.
Just to shut him up.
Yeah, pretty much. Lynette started to become very lonely. She had her neighbor friends there in Swanton that she would talk to, but she missed her childhood and college friends. So she would call them up and talk to them for hours. She would tell them about her problems, and they would grow more and more concerned for her. At one point, Tom cuts off their long-distance connection because she had run the bill up so high. So
poor
like
girls.
Back then, you
yeah,
it was pretty expensive to be like talking for 2-3 hours on the phones across states. Like 10 cents, 20 cents a minute or something like that. But he was pretty much keeping her from her friends and becoming more and more controlling. He thought of himself as the sole breadwinner after all.
He was.
Yeah, didn't want her spending all the money that he earned for the household. Tom's temper was getting worse and worse as the years went on. Multiple times he had punched holes through the doors and the walls in their house. Her friends heard all the tales of his emotional and physical abuse. They were all growing concerned about her and telling her that, like, it's probably time for her to think about leaving him.
Mm-hmm.
But that was against her religion.
Yeah.
Marriage was a sacred bond. It was like till death do us part, like for real, unless you got an annulment or something from the priest. Lynette would spend more and more time away from the confines of their home, either like shopping or, I guess, browsing stores because she couldn't spend his money.
Yeah. Just taking the baby and wandering around,
yeah,
going for walks.
Just getting out of the house, or she'd be at church. But this would piss Tom off because he wanted to know where she was at all times. He would regularly check up on her. He accused her multiple times of having an affair.
Listen, her vagina's already wrecked from you, bro. Right. She's not hooking up with somebody else.
After 11 years of marriage, their relationship was just completely down the drain. Lynette thought they needed marriage counseling. She had even asked the advice of her priest. But Tom felt like she was the only one with a problem and told her that she can go to counseling by herself. Tom had actually taken Lynette to a psychiatrist. He felt like she had a mental illness and was unstable.
Yeah, it's called Tom.
I know, he is the problem.
What a narcissist.
A few weeks into therapy, the doctor felt like she needed to be put on medication. She was prescribed with bipolar meds. She was anxious and depressed. One minute she was up, one minute she was down. Lynette didn't agree with the diagnosis. She felt like when she took the meds, she wasn't herself.
Like a zombie or something,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, she felt like she didn't need it.
I'm just curious how in depth she talked with the psychiatrist, because if Tom wasn't there and she felt like she was safe to talk about what was going on, you think he would want to contact the police if she mentioned something about being abused or...
I wouldn't be surprised if he went to those meetings with her or something.
Sat in the corner and stared at her. Yeah.
But she chose to, like, stop taking the meds. But Tom wasn't having that. So after, like, 6 months, Tom was getting concerned that, because he didn't think Lynette was improving at all, he actually had her hospitalized because of her depression. And when she was back at the house, he was, like, straight determined to make sure she took her meds, so he would hide it in her drinks and her food.
Oh, my God.
And, like, there was one time she tasted, like, orange juice. Like, she could tell something was in it. Obviously, Lynette was going through some shit. And to make matters worse, here's Tom over here still trying to get off with all this sexual desires multiple times a day. At this point, it's just rape, if you ask me.
Yes.
Their sexual relationship went from healthy at the beginning to, like, inappropriate to him physically manhandling her. He pretty much
that would be rape.
Forced himself on her in the end. If she said no, it would only be worse for her. And, I mean, she would tell her friends about all this.
That breaks my heart. I would have cut his dick off while he slept. Lorraine bob at him.
So this whole relationship is a disaster by now. Tom wasn't having his needs met. Lynette's feelings weren't being considered at all. The only thing to do at this point would have been just to get out. Just get out of the situation entirely. Lynette even met with her priest to ask about a divorce and an annulment, but the priest denied her request. She was married for life in the eyes of the Catholic Church. He told her maybe they just need, like, a brief separation, a breath of fresh air for things to die down. She was devastated at first, but some big news surprised everyone.
Is she pregnant?
Correct. She was still struggling with depression and actually spoke with one of her neighbors about what she was feeling. She told her that sometimes she just wanted to end it all. But everything changed when their son Brian was born on November 20th, 1998.
Not to be a Debbie Downer, but I wonder if she looks at her second child and knows that he's, like, the result of a rape, even though it was, you know, her husband.
I was kind of thinking that, too, while I was doing the research. Like,
that's horrible.
She loved both her kids, like, more than anything in the world. But, yeah, that's...
it's kind of messed up.
Yeah. When her second son came, she was happy again. She felt like a new baby could bring her and Tom back together, like they could start fresh. But her happiness was short-lived. And it was back to the same old shit with Tom and Lynette. Lynette had to talk to her friends and family by collect calls, you know, because, remember, he had disconnected their long-distance calls. Well, on Friday, June 25th, 1999, she spoke with her brother on the phone for about 2 hours. Her brother, Bob Quast, was actually getting married that September, and he wanted to talk to her about the wedding plans. But as soon as he mentioned the wedding, Lynette told him that she wasn't going to be able to go. Tom wasn't going to let her. And Bob was just shocked about this. He hadn't realized the extent to which Tom's control was over Lynette. She told Bob the horrible things Tom had done to her and said to her. And Bob was like, if this is true, you need to leave him. Bob offered to drive to Ohio to pick her up, to pick her and the boys up. But Lynette was like, I can't just leave. So Tom disables, like, the spark plugs in her car and, like, other shit in their car.
What?
So she, like, couldn't start it and would be just stuck at home. So she couldn't leave. I guess Bob could come pick her up and take her out of there. But she also told Bob that Tom said that if anybody ever came to try and get her out of there, that he would murder them and that he would hurt her and the boys too.
All you're doing is telling me more and more reasons to leave.
Call the cops, something.
Something. Holy shnikes.
around this time, Chris, the 8-year-old son, was actually in Whitewater, Wisconsin, visiting her parents. And she wanted to go with him, but Tom wouldn't let her. It just sounded like she was desperate and scared for her life, and Bob didn't know what to do for her. He thought the death threats were exaggerated by Lynette at the time. He suggested that when Tom went to work that next Monday, she should just drive straight to her parents' house in Wisconsin. But, like, how is she going to drive if ain't got no spark plugs? I don't know. So late that afternoon on that Monday, June 29th, 1999, Lynette put her baby, Brian, in his car seat and headed for the car in the driveway. But apparently Tom had not gone to work that day, because he kind of suspected Lynette's escape.
Really?
Well, he listens in on their phone calls. I figured. So I don't know if he heard them talking about that or not, but a neighbor actually witnessed him in the driveway blocking Lynette's minivan from leaving. And then he pushed Lynette back into the garage as she was holding Brian and closed the garage door. And that was the last time anyone ever saw Lynette alive.
Damn.
Lynette's father, Alan, called Lynette that evening, but there was no answer. Then he called her again the next day, still nothing. He called Tom at work asking about Lynette, and Tom told him that she was at home. He said that he had taken Brian to the doctor because he was sick, and Alan asked why Lynette didn't take him, because Tom had work, you know, but Tom said that Lynette didn't want to leave the house. Like, she didn't feel like leaving the house. All very strange and just off to Alan. A voice in his head was telling him that he needed to go, like, save his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So, right then and there, he left Wisconsin.
That's a good daddy.
Drove 6 straight hours to the Crafts home in Ohio. And he arrived early Wednesday morning. He had a spare key, so he let himself in and was so exhausted that he just fell asleep on the couch downstairs.
Risky. Risky.
I was thinking that too. Like, I would not be falling asleep with a potential killer in the house.
I'm trying to remember if it's something we told or it was something that was in the news. But it was something about, like, a dad hadn't heard from his daughter or something was going on, but he was, like, waiting for, like, a confirmation or a phone call or something. And all I could think was, dude, at any slight indication that something is off, my dad would be in the car hauling ass.
Mm-hmm,
you know, he's not going to sit around and wait for something. I mean, same thing, you know, if you didn't hear from me for whatever, you're going to be like, well, huh? Gone. Like, you're not going to sit around and wait. So yeah. I applaud Mr. Allen over here.
Me too. Well, he woke up abruptly because he felt a presence standing over him. And sure enough, it was Tom. Alan asked him where his daughter was, and Tom said that he didn't know. He thinks she has been having an affair on him, is what he told Alan anyways. And of course, Alan was like, I know my daughter, and she wouldn't do something like that.
It's a good Christian girl.
Yeah.
Catholic girl. Good Catholic girl.
Same thing.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I'm Jewish.
While Alan was at the house, he noticed a few things that seemed off to him. One was that all the curtains were pulled shut, even though they had always been left open. And then Tom and Lynette had always left a strand of Christmas lights on around the perimeter of the downstairs as sort of like a nightlight. But all those lights were unplugged. Alan decided to leave the house, and he went straight to the Swanton Police Department to file a missing persons report, and that was at 8:37 a.m. that morning. The Swanton Police immediately issued a BOL, or Be on the Lookout, for Lynette Craft, and they got some disturbing news a lot faster than they expected. At around 6:30 p.m., a McDonald's worker 60 miles away in Ann Arbor, Michigan, was taking out the trash when he noticed a bag in there that looked unusual, like it didn't belong. He looked inside and nearly had a heart attack. Inside the bag were two human feet and legs cut off just below the knees. He quickly notified his manager, and they called the police, and they suspected that it was probably Lynette Craft.
Really? That quickly?
Well, the news spread, I guess. And not long after that, at a rest stop, police discovered female thighs and an ID in the pocket of a pair of bloody shorts. The ID belonged to Lynette Craft. And then her head was later found in a landfill in Washtenaw County, Michigan. Her torso was never found. Probably lost somewhere in the landfill. They're not sure.
Or, yeah, because if it was like in a dumpster, then maybe they would have found it.
Possibly. Lynette had been dismembered, and the body parts found were cut very clean. It was just a very unusual situation, to say the least.
Yeah, because for someone who hated the sight of blood, she ended up a bloody mess. Mm-hmm.
When her family heard of the devastating news, of course, they were all in shock and in disbelief. Like, this can't be true. What type of sick human being could chop up a body and dump it in the trash like that? Police obviously questioned Tom, and he told them that he thought she was having an affair on him. He told them that she came after him with a knife and cut his finger really bad, and then she felt awful for what she did, and she turned the knife on herself and stabbed herself in the chest.
You can't tell me one reason that would lead to a dismemberment, though.
I'm about to.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
He said he ran over to her, but it was too late. And he was telling them a lot about, like, the mental issues going on there, how she was seeing a psychiatrist, and then she was off and on her medications.
He was setting this whole thing up to make her look like she's been flying over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, and he said, since suicide was against her and her family's strong Catholic beliefs, he wanted to hide that from them and her children. So to do this, he said he decided he would dismember the body and hide the pieces. And he even did like a dry run of all the places he dropped the body parts off at, asking them like when trash pickup was. Chris, their 8-year-old son, actually told investigators, too, that he had saw his father watching a video of how to dismember a body.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, can you imagine that on, like, dial-up back in the day? Trying to watch a video of how to dismember a body?
It would take over an hour and a half to load.
How do you even find something like that on the internet back then? I'm sure you could now. Isn't that crazy? So he pretty much said she killed herself, but I chopped her up into bits and pieces.
So she wouldn't be ashamed of what she did?
Yeah, so her family wouldn't think little of her, I guess, for committing suicide.
Think little of her? Nice choice of words. There's little bits of her everywhere, love.
Given the state of the house, suicide wasn't completely out of the question, though. There were tons of small notes written in Lynette's room talking about how unhappy she was and how awful her marriage was. You remember the little sticky notes that she'd put up everywhere?
Oh, she did that?
Yeah.
I thought he did that to be part of that whole controlling nature he had.
No, she had, like, to-do lists and stuff, and she'd write sticky notes everywhere, but she'd also, like, write her feelings down on stuff, too.
I was thinking, like, every room he put something like, don't forget to do this, God. You need to do that, blah, blah, you know?
That wouldn't surprise me, yeah. They came to the conclusion that she was depressed and had been going through some shit for years. They questioned neighbors, and they said they didn't notice any changes from when she was on her meds, from when she was off her meds. It was hard to tell if she really needed the medication or if her husband was forcing it upon her. Her family thought that there was no way that she would have committed suicide. For one, she didn't like the sight of blood, so the last thing she would do would be to stab herself in the chest with a knife. And she was a devout Catholic. Suicide is a mortal sin. that wouldn't be forgiven in the eyes of God, so she wouldn't do that either. Forensic evidence from the house would prove them right. When the luminol was sprayed throughout the house, there was a large amount of blood in the kitchen, drag marks going down the hallway and footprints going down the hallway, and it was Lynette's blood. Also, when they located Lynette's severed head, there was bruising all over her face and about a dozen stab wounds.
Ugh, that's unfortunate.
And they were done while she was still alive because the bruising on her face indicated that her heart was still pumping blood when she was beaten, which means Tom was lying. She didn't commit suicide. What it looked like from the forensic evidence was Tom stabbed her to death in the kitchen and drug her to the utility room and dismembered her body. And then he put her body parts in garbage bags and transported them to different locations in Michigan.
Crossing the state line makes it federal.
Mm.
Plus all that weed he's growing. I'm sure he's still doing that. Mm.
I think it was just a couple plants. But
it don't matter. He's still growing it.
Tom Craft was arrested and charged with aggravated murder, possession of criminal tools, and gross abuse of a corpse. They wanted to push for murder one, and you'd think this was an open and shut case, right? But the problem here is that they didn't find her torso. They weren't confident that they could prove without a reasonable doubt that Tom killed her.
Oh, because most of the damage was to the torso.
Well,
I assume all this, more of the stab marks.
It's not necessarily that. It's just that the chief medical examiner had concluded that the immediate cause of death was undetermined because the torso wasn't there. Like, it could have been from something else, I guess, not the dismemberment of the body or the stab wounds to the face. Like,
okay.
You know?
He didn't know the exact cause of death.
So Lynette's parents were talked into accepting a plea bargain under the premise that the lack of full body recovery and no certain cause of death could lead to Tom's acquittal on the basis of reasonable doubt. If that happened, Tom would walk free, or could walk free, you know. Not only would he walk free, but he would also get to raise the two boys.
And they couldn't charge him again because of double jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, a full trial would also have meant that Chris would have had to testify too, and they didn't want to put him through more torment like that. Yeah, he was pretty scared of his father. So what happened was Tom was offered an Alford plea, and
oh,
he took it.
This is what you were talking about the other day.
And if you don't know what an Alford plea is, which I had never heard of it, I was asking Megan, like, what the heck is an Alford plea? But it's basically, it's not an admission of guilt, but an acknowledgement of the strength of the state's case against you.
Guilty, but not guilty, and kind of, but still guilty.
Yeah. Well, on April 19th, 2000, the sentencing hearing was held. The state attempted to establish that Kraft intentionally killed his wife, dismembered her body. There was evidence of this used by blacklights, blood found in the couple's bathtub, underneath carpet, and in the couple's garage. He then disposed of her body parts at various locations in the state of Michigan to avoid being caught. The defense attempted to show that Tom's wife committed suicide by stabbing herself in the chest, and that Tom then dismembered and disposed of the body so his young children and her family would not know that she killed herself.
That is just an extreme way to do that, sir.
It's so crazy. Like, anybody could just come up with this stupid story.
Yeah.
You know, anytime somebody killed somebody, just say, oh, they killed themselves, and I just chopped them up afterwards. Like, that is just insane. I would rather just take the risk and let the jury decide for me. Like, come on. That is wild. So, with this plea bargain, he was only sentenced to 12 years in prison. Isn't that crazy? 10 for voluntary manslaughter, 1 year for gross abuse of a corpse, and 1 year for possession of criminal tools. Sentences were to be served consecutively, and he had already served a year of it. So he was looking at being out in 2011 when he could have just
been in life.
Life. Like, I think
I would arrest it.
I think you had a case for it. Clearly had a case for it.
Yeah, because if he somehow was acquitted at that trial by the jury, I'm just going to say I think Alan would have killed his son-in-law. He's going to go all Liam on him.
Probably. So when Tom was sentenced, the judge characterized him as a very intelligent sociopath. And when you think of killers, you often think of like psychopathic individuals. But a sociopath is someone that society has accepted as like this normal...
Hides under the surface.
Normal person. Like they may be a little odd or quiet or out of place, but just like they're the average coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tom's coworkers were asked about Tom by the law enforcement, none of them even suspected or believed that Tom could have done something like this or was capable of doing something like this. Mm-hmm. When Tom was sent away, both sets of parents met up at the Kraft home. They were like going through what items they wanted to keep. As Tom's father sat down on the recliner in the living room, Lynette's dad noticed something fall out of his pocket. It was like a piece of paper, but Tom's father didn't notice it fell out. And after Tom's parents left, Lynette's parents picked that piece of paper up, and it was this hand-drawn map.
Where body parts were?
No.
Oh, damn it.
So, sorry. Tom had drawn out a map of where he hid Lynette's diamond wedding ring, and it was in the basement ceiling tiles above the laundry room. Like, how fucked up is that?
Why would you put it there?
I don't know, but...
That's a weird thing. I don't feel like you really need a map for that. I think you could just tell them it's in the ceiling.
True. Well, Lynette's parents ended up going down there, and sure enough, that's where it was. And on the paper, Tom also wrote, "We can get out of this." Then, a couple months later, the two families met at a bank. So Lynette's brother Bob said that they thought they were meeting up to discuss, like, putting together a trust for the two boys.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, the Crafts had brought with them a lawyer, and a contract was made up. And in this contract, the Crafts wanted the Quasts to agree to never write a book or sign a movie deal that talked about any circumstances surrounding the death of Lynette.
Is that why Bob's book's not really about it, but it is kind of about it?
No, Bob ripped up that contract fast.
Yeah.
It's like he was a businessman, so he dealt with contracts a lot, and he read it and was like, hell no. And then he obviously wrote his book. But apparently there's a book out there written by Tom Kraft that tells his side of the story, so we'll have to look that up.
Oh, okay.
Now, it wasn't long after his conviction that Tom started calling Lynette's mother, demanding to speak with his two boys.
Nope.
It was just like ongoing torture for almost 10 years. And Barbara believed that if she didn't do what Tom wanted, he would be mad at her and might kill her whenever he got released. So she allowed him to speak with the boys. And then he also wrote like hundreds of letters. And same thing, she gave in. Gave them to the boys out of fear.
I hope she read them first.
Oh, I'm sure she probably did. In 2011, Lynette's family heard the news that Tom was going to be released from prison, and his plan was to come back to Wisconsin and live close to his sons. Obviously, they weren't happy about this. I mean, who would be?
So Lynette's parents had custody of the boys?
Yes, they had grown up with them. And I'm sure they were scared of him. They petitioned for Tom to be kept in a separate state away from them. And he ended up spending the next 5 years under Ohio State supervision at a halfway house. And for 90 days, he had to like look for a job and wear a tether. Bob and the rest of the family were still worried, though. Like, Tom could literally, like, go murder them in Wisconsin, drive back to Ohio and say that he looked for a job all day and didn't find one or something mm-hmm. like that. It'd be that easy. Bob worked on getting a law enacted called Lynette's Law that would let victims and their families sign off on the conditions of a criminal's release so they would know where that person is headed beforehand. So that was pretty cool. The family wrote to more than 500 politicians, including Obama, in an effort to increase the rights of victims upon an inmate's release.
Good, good.
Lynette's two boys, Chris and Brian, grew up living with Lynette's parents. They didn't learn the full details of their mother's death until they were older, old enough to handle it at least. Chris was only 8 when his mother was killed, but he remembered her and he found ways to be near her. So she loved cats, and whenever Chris would have a bad day, he would just go snuggle up with his cats, Pokey and Blackbeard. Those names.
Cute.
He went off to school at St. Ambrose University in Iowa, but ended up transferring back home to the University of Wisconsin just to be closer to his family and to his brother. It was just too hard being away from him, which I can understand that. And then Brian was doing well. He grew up wanting to be a mechanic and opening his own garage when he was old enough. And I don't know what they're doing now. I mean, they're grown men now. So Lynette grew up in a very devout Christian family. She married her high school sweetheart and wanted nothing more to be a mom and a homemaker. She loved her two young boys so much. She unfortunately was a victim of a prolonged domestic abuse at the hands of her husband until he eventually killed her. Whether it was by his hands or her own, it was because of him. She was survived by her parents, Alan and Barbara, her brothers, Bob and Tommy, and her two sons, Chris and Brian. And that is the story of Lynette Quast Craft.
Good job, love.
Thanks. What are your thoughts?
So, Tom was obviously kept in Ohio for at least 5 years. And then, is there any record of or any indication where he went from that point?
I don't know. We'll have to look.
Maybe it's in his dad's book, but I don't know how new that book is. No, you Tom's said Tom. Book. Bro. Oh.
Tom's book.
Oh, that's probably full of filth and trash. Yep. I don't want to hear all about lies. Him jerking off to
And I wouldn't buy it either. It would have to be free for me to read any of it.
It could be free on the Kindle.
Could be. I ain't giving him none of my money.
Damn. That's unfortunate.
I feel like someone should have stepped in, done something. They all knew that he was abusive, so.
Yeah, she talked to her family for hours. You know, she said something or, I don't know, like a keyword or she could have written to them secretly and been like, hey, I have a safe word that when we're talking on the phone, in case Tom's listening, if I ever say this word, I'm in trouble.
Something like that.
She probably could have written letters secretly, mailed them off. He would never have known, you know, and just try to find help that way. But people don't
think. It's sad, though. I'm sure that happens
Everywhere. That's more common than you would probably think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we have a divorce rate of like, what, 40, 50%?
50, yeah.
Imagine the percent that sticks around with their abusive spouse when they could get a divorce or leave them. It's just crazy.
I'm not knocking it because it's special to a lot of people, but the fact that she let religion control her life so much that she lost her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I know faith is the only thing that some people do have to cling to. But when it's your life and your kids' lives, you got to choose.
How can the priest not give an annulment for something like that?
Yeah, or I mean, she didn't ask.
Unless she didn't tell him all of what was going on.
And that's the person you can talk to about it because they can't.
Confidentiality
or
whatever.
Right.
And then, of course, you got to talk about the legal system, how fucked up that is.
I think he would have gotten a guilty plea. That's too much blood. That's too much. Even without her torso, you know she was killed.
The facial stabs
mm-hmm.
alone right there.
And I'm just curious what the medical examiner needed that middle section of her body to conclusively say that. Because obviously, if you're going to know who she is by her head and you can see the trauma to the head, then you're going to use that blood and DNA to make sure those legs that you found, just because there's an ID in the pocket, that that is her. So you've got top, you got bottom. I don't see why he would necessarily need the middle section. Because if you're going to look for toxins or something that maybe she got knocked out or whatever, I get it that maybe something is kept in some of the organs for longer that you're looking for, but you can still get blood from the other sections and test it for certain toxicology or, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of irritated me. The whole thing irritated me, honestly. I would have cut his dick off while he slept. Oh, in a heartbeat. And Bob should have gone, just like their dad did.
Mm-hmm.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. She could be alive if somebody would just stepped in. Tom, you piece of shit. That wraps up another episode here on the Caught Red Podcast. If you like us, share us. You can leave us a review wherever you listen to us. If you do that, then more people are likely to find us and hear all the noises that our dogs make. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. When you are looking us up, podcast is PAWD. And feel free to send any recommendations that you may have. We love to make that list grow. But until next time, stay local. Shop local.
Murder local.